the day of the reflection retreat, I remember being in this room with a number of women, and I had the last decade of my life laid out. And Melanie was asking some poignant questions. And I remember just feeling a stab in the heart and an overwhelm of sadness and also happiness. And I burst out crying because it was in that moment when I had the last decade of my life laid out in front of me that I was looking and saying, wow, I'm really proud of everything that I've done. And the sadness came from, I have never let myself feel that way.
Hi, I'm Bob Mathers, and welcome to The Growth Mixtape, a podcast where I talk to the most interesting people you might not have come across yet. I find that these conversations give me new insights and perspectives about topics I didn't know existed. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first, but just like songs and a mixtape, they create something memorable and emotional. Today we talk to Sensi Graves, a professional kiteboarder, entrepreneur, and speaker who's on a mission to help people build self-confidence and share their amazing uniqueness with the world. This was a powerful conversation that has stuck with me ever since. If you've ever had imposter syndrome or felt like no matter how many amazing things you've done, it's never enough, I guarantee you'll find something here that helps. Sensi shares how comparing ourselves to others and setting goals actually kills our self-confidence, and she shares simple daily habits that can help. We also connected on exploring your why and how it's the key to finding your people and helping you through hard times. Please enjoy Sensi Graves. All right. Good morning, Sensi Graves. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. I have so much to cover. I'm really excited about this.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Bob.
So I was reading up a little bit on you, and you're in a place called Hood River, Oregon. So I looked it up. Is it as magical and beautiful as it looks on the internet? Because that is a fairy tale land.
Every day I wake up and I say, I'm so grateful for where I live. It's truly an outdoor person's playground. We have the Columbia River, which is right next to our town. It's a massive waterway. That's where I kite. That's where I wing. But we have all these rivers and waterways. And then, yes, we have mountains as well. And so there's epic mountain biking, world-class hiking trails, and then the ski hill about 45 minutes from town. So you get this amalgamation of outdoor sports that is hard to find all around the country. So I feel very privileged to live here.
It is beautiful. And so, yeah, you've already mentioned a couple of things. Interesting. So you're a professional kiteboarder, you're an entrepreneur, and you're a professional speaker on confidence and empowerment. So kiteboarder, entrepreneur, professional speaker. Two of those I know a little bit about. One I know absolutely nothing about. So hopefully you're not allergic to stupid questions because you're in for a steady diet of them. You've already mentioned kiting and winging, I think. I've heard about this thing called wing foiling. So I'm just curious, what are those? What is wing foiling?
Wing foiling is interesting because it's a new wind sport. So it came out about 4 years ago. And both kiting and winging are powered by the wind, and both are similar to sailing in that you have a sail and you're tacking back and forth across the water using the power of the wind to pull you. Kiteboarding, you have a big kite in the sky, about 20 meters of lines. You can ride a variety of boards. You can ride essentially what is a wakeboard. You can ride a surfboard. You can ride a foil board. You have a harness that connects you, and then you're pulling yourself back and forth across the water, just like a sailboat's tacking. Wing foiling, you only ride a foil board. That's why it's called wing foiling. And so you are a lot more nimble. There's not as much drag with the foil, and you're holding the wing. So it's kind of like windsurfing, but less equipment because there's no boom. So more maneuverable, more adept to riding swell or waves, which in Hood River, we are lucky that we have a lot of river swell. But riding in the ocean and pulling yourself into waves, super duper fun. And then the foil just feels like you're flying. So it's my new favorite sport. And it's, just kind of a magical community of water sports athletes.
Well, and I appreciate how you dumbed that down for me, because you started at you know, at the very beginning with how you propel yourself through the air. That helps a lot. And yeah, and foiling are those things that I don't think I've ever actually seen one in person. I'm a long way from rivers the size of the Columbia, and I'm a long way from the ocean, but I'm close to the Great Lakes. And I've seen lots of kiteboarding, but I've never seen foiling yet. So that I've only seen that on the internet where people are on a board of some kind with this, I don't know, this tiny
looks
keel.
Crazy.
Yeah, I know. I still don't understand the physics of how that works.
It's essentially an airplane underwater. The airplane is cutting through the water. That's what's supporting you. It's creating lift based on whatever aerodynamics are used with airplanes. I don't know the physics of that either. Just creates a different feeling when you ride. And I don't know how long hydrofoils have been around. You know, they use them on boats as well because they're less drag through the water and you can actually go faster. But it's really interesting to be on something. It's pretty unstable. So it's actually the hardest sport that I've ever learned because it kind of feels like you're balancing on a pogo stick on a yoga ball. And it's totally against any sort of board sport movements that you've done in the past. But that for me is why I was initially really attracted to it, because it's a new stimulating challenge. And I think that's one of the best things I get out of sports in general, is that you can always be doing something new and pushing yourself and learning and creating those new neural pathways. And that is what I find most engaging about life, is the stimulation and the newness that you get to experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I definitely want to bookmark that. But first I want to, like, how do you get involved in kiteboarding?
I laugh because it's totally random. When I first learned to kiteboard, I never even heard of the sport. My dad actually took my three brothers and I have three brothers out to North Carolina to learn. I was in college. I was a freshman in college. And I was like, what? What are we going to do? I've never heard of this. And long story short, fell completely in love with the sport, kept in touch with the school in North Carolina that we had learned at, a place called Real Water Sports. And a few years later, they were looking for kite coaches. And even though I was not very good, I could barely do it. I was like, that sounds like a fun summer job. Sign me up. My older brother and I moved out to North Carolina for the summer, totally immersed ourselves in kiteboarding. You know, we were coaching, we were either in the water ourselves playing or working. And so we were always kiteboarding. And that really connected me to this community of amazing people, this sport that I was like, this is awesome, and completely changed the entire trajectory of my life. My entire life has revolved around kiteboarding and water sports.
What do you think it was about kiteboarding that attracted you so much to it?
That's a great question, Bob. I don't know that anyone has ever asked me that. I think it's the engagement with the elements. You are powering yourself on the water, and you are both out there alone and then also in community. It's an individual sport, but you do it with other people. And so it feels really, really engaging, really stimulating. It's also hard to learn. And so I think that little bit of hurdle that it takes, that commitment it takes to get good at kiteboarding, solidifies your relationship with the other people that are kind of crazy enough to be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to drag myself through the water and almost drown sometimes when you're learning to keep the kite up. And so it creates this connection and community that is based on a love of the outdoors, a love of water, a respect for nature, and that stoke that you get when you are in flow with what you're doing. And for me, a lot of sports bring that for me.
That state of flow, that's interesting. Is that the first time you think that you ever found that state of flow where you're just connected and not really thinking or trying? Everything's just happening exactly the way it's supposed to?
No, because I played sports growing up. And so for me, I was really into basketball. I was like a basketball star. I went to a really small town, so it was not a lot of competition. But that being said, I was really good. And that engagement with play, I think for me, it's been play and sports. And when you're doing something that you can't really think about too many other things because you're either competing or you are using your body in a way that requires all your focus. But I didn't know. You know, now there's all this research around flow and how great it is for our brains and how it really expands our capabilities. Mm-hmm. But at that time, of course, you don't know. You just do it because it's fun. And so even when I learned to kiteboard, it wasn't like, oh, this is flow. Yes, I got to keep doing this.
This is what I've been reading all about. I found it.
Yeah. Self-help, let's go. Okay, check the flow box off the list.
Well, that's awesome. So how do you go from, we met, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago at sort of a training or a conference kind of thing. And I must admit, I didn't know there was such thing as a professional kiteboarder. So how does that transition happen from a summer job and just finding something you love to somehow making a living at it?
The interesting thing I think there is that I actually never wanted to be a pro kiteboarder. When I first started coaching, I was in the spot in North Carolina that was known for this one specific discipline, which is park riding. So just like they have rails and jumps in snowboarding, you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
They have the same thing floating on the water for kiteboarding. It's a very niche discipline because it's costly to make and maintain. But I happened to be in this place where that was what everyone was doing. And so it was a little bit of right place, right time. But when I first started coaching, I was like, okay, cool. This is fun. I'm just learning to really do this sport. I went back to school, graduated college, and then moved back out to North Carolina. And from that point on, really was chasing summer kiteboarding year round. So at this time, we got to back up a little bit because when I was probably my second year of coaching is when I wanted to start my swimmer company, when I had the idea to start a swimmer company. Because I was in the water every single day. I was in a swimsuit every day, and I wanted something that would stay put. So during this time of travel and coaching, I was focused on building my business. I have always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and then I had this spark. I told people I was going to do it, and then I said, okay, well, now I have to do it. So honestly, the sponsorship kiteboarding thing was more, okay, this is fun, and I'm building my business on the side, and that's what I'm focused on, rather than putting myself out there. But inadvertently, I was making these relationships and learning subconsciously what a great sponsor-athlete relationship looks like. But I was focused on building my business.
I guess I had thought that you had done much of your kiteboarding and then started the swimwear. So it was, they happened in parallel, or I guess the swimwear actually happened before the kiteboarding.
Yeah. The swimmer actually happened before because, as I said, it wasn't my goal to be a pro kiteboarder.
Yeah.
But as I said in the beginning, it was a lot of resistance on my part because I said, I'm focused on this. I want to be an entrepreneur. I don't feel good enough to do that. I don't want to start competing. And so it was really an interesting time for me as a young woman with that huge confidence piece and learning to realize what I wanted. And as I started immersing myself in that culture of park riding in North Carolina and then just chasing kiteboarding, people would be like, oh, you should start competing. You're here. You're already doing this. Like, I was barely at the beginning of my kiteboarding career, but because there were so few women and because there were so few people in general hitting park features, people were like, oh, you should do it. And I was like, no, what? I just learned 3 years ago. No, I don't want to compete. That's way too much pressure, which actually goes into this whole believing in yourself piece that I want to talk about. But I really didn't believe that I could do it. I was like, I am brand new to this sport. I don't feel very confident doing it. And just because I'm out here trying doesn't mean that I should go compete. Now I had enough pressure and I was in a position of being good enough over the next year or so that I did start to compete and I won a wild card entry into this contest in North Carolina. That was the biggest kite contest in the US called the Triple S Invitational. And there from then on, I was like, okay, well, now I am competing. And because I'm a competitive person, I was like, well, now I want to do well. But I was very hesitant. I kind of had my heels in the ground. Like, I don't really want to put myself out there.
But you had the confidence to start a company, but you didn't have the confidence to become a kiteboarder? Do I have that right?
You know, I think it's difficult because I didn't even really have the confidence to start a company. I think what actually happened was I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. That's been there. But it wasn't coming from a place of confidence. I think when I actually started my company was from a place of wanting to prove myself. And I do have a lot of grit. I have a lot of resilience. And those were the drivers with starting the business. It wasn't, I can do this, I'm amazing. It was like, okay, I have this idea. I think I can, I mean, I should try, but I don't know. This is me. I don't feel worthy, but I got to prove, I want to prove myself. I want to prove myself. And so it was more from a place of like wanting to prove that I could do it that really enabled me to start the business. And also it was knowing nothing, because what you don't know can't hurt you in a sense. And so I was so naive that I had no idea what really would take. One of my best qualities, to toot my own horn, is that when I say something, when I say I'm going to do something, I'll do it. And so when I put that out there and voiced it to the world, it was like, okay, well, now I have to do it. And that was that proving piece that really was the driver initially for the first little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd love to get your take on this, because I do find this too. I was reflecting a bit on some of my experiences in preparation for this. And I think most people would look at, you know, your resume and your, the kiteboarding and starting the company, and they think, wow, like what a badass, you're so full of self-confidence and nothing can stop her. And when she puts her mind to it, there's nothing she can't do, all those sorts of things. And I reflect on it. It's like, yeah, I think lots of people would look at the way I conduct myself, for example, with some of my clients or when I'm speaking, and think, yeah, that's a confident dude. I can be, but it's fragile. And so that's something that I've been reflecting a lot on. And I'm just wondering if you, did you always realize that you weren't confident, or is that something that just occurred to you later?
That's a great question, because it definitely occurred to me later. And I think the instance it really occurred to me was in a reflection retreat. So for a number of years, I've been working with coaches and realized the importance of getting coaches and investing in yourself. And I would do these things called reflection retreats with one of my coaches, Melanie McCloskey. So at the end of every single year, she would put on this one-day retreat where we would dive into our previous year. And the year actually was 2019. And we are going into 2020. And so we did a decade in review, because we're starting this new decade and okay, all these things are happening. And I pulled out all of the things I had done in the last 10 years. And so I spent a lot of time doing pre-work before going into this retreat. The day of the reflection retreat, I remember being in this room with a number of women, and I had the last decade of my life laid out. And Melanie was asking some poignant questions. And I remember just feeling a stab in the heart and an overwhelm of sadness and also happiness. And I burst out crying, and I had to excuse myself, because it was in that moment when I had the last decade of my life laid out in front of me that I was looking and saying, wow, I'm really proud of myself. I'm really proud of everything that I've done. And the sadness came from, I have never let myself feel that way. And this entire time, I've been striving, and trying to prove myself, while the only person I can really be worthy of and be proud of and who can approve of me is me. And when looking at that, and I said, wow, I am proud of myself, that made me realize, oh, I'm allowed to tell myself that anytime. And that's how I'm going to actually impact the world. When I say I'm doing enough, I've done enough. Now I can show up wholeheartedly and with the light that can shine from people when we feel worthy and enough.
Wow, that's amazing. How did that change? How did things change after that epiphany you had?
I have been doing self-work before that point. And so I've been putting in practices of developing my confidence and developing my worth. And as I've been working on my business, I've had all of these ways to say, okay, yep, you're doing a great job, you're doing enough. But after that point, it was just this inherent knowing of, okay, once I see my mind going into the, you're not doing enough, you need to do more, I can say, oh, wait, I am doing a good job. And when I feel that, then I can actually perform. And at what point am I doing things just to prove myself rather than doing it in service of other people and doing it for that bigger why that I like to talk about? Because when you're doing it from a place of like, I need to prove myself, this is all like, yeah, it's about me, you can't show up in a way that really is sustaining and also that has the impact that you actually want to have. And so I think from that point forward, it was really just like a weight off the shoulder of, wow, I didn't know that I'm the only one that can be proud of me. I've been looking for other people's worth and validation this entire time, and I can give that to myself every single day. So let's do that.
Yeah, I was listening to something recently too about the difference between self-confidence and self-worth. Do you think those two things are separate?
I do think they're separate because language is so powerful. And when you dive into the actual language around and the word worth and the word confidence, there's differentiating factors. And so, yeah, for sure, they're intertwined. I believe that worth is that really core piece that each human is so worthy and so enough just as we are, but we forget that. We achieve the goal and then the goal moves up. And so I think worth is much more inherent and a lot harder to really achieve. Confidence to me is something that we can, it is a little bit of you can fake it till you make it. I can't remember the woman that puts on this TED talk, but it's the superwoman pose that actually when you stand like this for 2 minutes, releases more testosterone in your body and creates more confidence. So we can utilize our body language, somatic movement, our voice to shift how we feel in the moment. And that to me is that confidence piece. I can generate the energy that I want to bring and put myself up in a way that exudes the confidence I want to have. The worth takes a lot more internal work and a lot more deep diving into the self and realizing that you're worthy no matter what. And that is a lot harder to come by. So yes, I believe they're different.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. You mentioned that superwoman pose. I remember that TED talk. I also listened to a podcast recently. I really should start writing these things down because I can never provide the sources of them. But there was this exercise where you go into the mirror every morning and you give yourself a high five for like 30 days. You just look at yourself.
Mel Robbins. In the
mirror. Oh, yes. Mel Robbins. That's it. See, there you go. You're much better at this than I am. And the impact that that had for people that did that. When do we put our hands up in the air? We're celebrating. We're joyous and just going through those movements. Although I'm sure it feels really awkward and stupid at first, but it can have a huge impact apparently. Maybe I should start doing that.
Yeah. Well, and those are all those little things where we think that confidence should be this watershed moment where we have this huge revelation around, wow, I'm the most, oh, I didn't realize I could be confident. Now I'm the most confident person ever. But in actuality, confidence is built on these small motions over time that really just lead us to the person that we want to become. And so it's building on these habits and it takes a long time. We want confidence to be something that just shows up for us in this one revelatory instance, but it really is just something that we need to put the time into doing. And that to me was the biggest learning in the decade of research I did around confidence, which is it's not going to be one thing and it's not going to be the same thing for everyone, but you have to keep showing up and trying and doing everything you can to fill your own cup up, because I'll tell you what, hard things are going to happen. Things are going to go wrong. The world's going to be mean to you. And you are going to have to turn back into what you know to be helpful and true to you. And that just takes time to discover.
What are the biggest obstacles you think people face? And I'm wondering, what are some of those things that you've found work for you or you've seen work for other people in building this practice?
The biggest obstacles people face, comparison. Number one is comparison. And social media, while it brings a lot of positives, obviously has so many negatives. And the number one thing that I see is just, I'm not doing enough because someone else is living this life that looks a certain way. I'm not doing enough because my body doesn't look like that other person's that I saw. And the truth is, there's always going to be someone better than you. And there's always going to be someone that has a better body than you or has more money than you. And that's subjective, right? Better. But when we look at and compare it to other people, it makes it really hard for us to show up saying, I'm doing enough. And so I think that comparison is number one. And then beyond that, I think the hardest things that we have are the ever-moving goal stick. As humans, we actually get dopamine from chasing after a goal, not from achieving the goal. And so when you, I know you've done this, Bob, but when you achieve a goal, oftentimes we don't celebrate or do anything. We're just like, okay, great. I did that. Now what's the next one? And that's wired into us as humans because we needed something that motivated us to go out and gather food and go get water and do all the things that needed to keep us alive. The problem with that now is when you put so much pressure on actually achieving the goal, we forget about, and it's trite, but you forget about the journey. You forget about enjoying the process and how much growth and uncovering and discovery and joy you can get out of actually going after the goal, because that's where we get the dopamine. That's where we find purpose. That's where we find passion. What has worked for me, simply in regards to those two things, is number one, just shutting down the social media and noticing, when am I feeling comparison? I'll give an example. A number of years ago, one of my best friends was going on a kiteboarding trip to Thailand, and I wanted to go on the trip. Something happened. I couldn't go. And she was creating all this really great content and posting all the time and, you know, showing her epic trip. And I was super jealous. And I felt every time I looked at it, I was like, man, I'm jealous of her. And I'm comparing myself. I'm here in the rain and she's out in Thailand having a great time. And so I actually, even though this is one of my really good friends, completely muted her on my social media so that I wouldn't have the trigger of her coming up and me feeling that reaction. And we can have a lot, it's hard because these social media companies are keeping us engaged. You can look at the triggers around you in so many instances saying, if I walk by a mirror and it's making me not feel great, turn the mirror around. What are the triggers that I have in my everyday life that are making me feel like I'm not enough? And really actively work to stop that trigger. And then for the moving of the goals, this was a really tough one for me, and I decided to change my goal. I decided to actually change my marker of success. I think I first kind of heard about this concept with Tony Robbins, no surprise. But he told the story about being in a room full of powerful people, and that the moderator asked a question of, who here feels successful? And one person stood up and they said, you know, these are all a room full of multimillionaires, billionaires, people that own private islands and private jets and all that. And one person stood up and they said, I don't feel successful. I still need to get on the cover of Forbes, and we have this much profit that we want to make this year, and I want to buy the new Maserati. I don't know. And I need to do all these things. I don't feel successful. And then he sat back down and another person stood up. And they said, heck yes, I feel successful. I woke up today. And I was like, oh, right. We get to actually change and choose where our marker of success is. And if your marker of success is I woke up today, you walk around feeling I'm successful already. You feel like you're doing a great job. And that creates so much more worth than I need to achieve this thing and get on the cover of Forbes magazine before I feel successful. And that goes directly into the amount of quality work that you can produce in the world. And so instead of focusing on, I need to get to this next goal, my focus is on, did I show up and did I try? If I did that, then I'm successful.
Man, I love that. Did I show up and did I try? I think I remember that story. And of course, if anybody else outside that room would look at that group of people, they would think how accomplished and how confident and how happy they would be because of all the things that they've achieved. And it does make me, you know, listening to you recount that story makes me realize of the things. I'm very aware of it now. Like when I go and talk to a group of people or I have a meeting and I just absolutely kill it. And I come out of that meeting, I'm like, that was awesome. Like I planned for it. It couldn't have gone better. And you know how long that feeling lasts? Like 30 seconds if I'm lucky. And then it's the next thing that is in front of me. You're right. And so maybe showing up and trying is a much better marker of progress and success than the outcome, because it never ends.
And that's all you can control. The only thing you can control in life is your effort and your attitude. And there have been times, Bob, when I have set a goal and I didn't hit the goal. I was in a kite contest a number of years ago. I was doing all the things, the visualization, the pumping myself up, like you can do it, you can do it. And we're hitting sliders. And it was last feature, the last slider. There's four of us in the final. And if you mess up on a feature, you're not going to win. And so we're going into a kicker. Do you guys know what a kicker is?
Do you think I know what a kicker is, Sensi?
It's a jump. We're going to do a jump. And so it's the last feature of the event. And I had good scores on the board, but I needed to score well on this last feature in order to be in a position of possibly winning. I was going into the kicker, kiteboarding into the kicker, and I'm like, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. And I try and go for my trick and I crash. First attempt. Come back again. I'm like, okay, you got this. You can do it. You've done this 1,000 times. You can do it. You can do it. Go for my trick and I crash. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You got one more attempt. Let's go. You got this. You can do it. I go into the kicker. I jump up off the kicker. I go for my maneuver and I crash. I lost the contest. I came in fourth place. And there was no going back to that. And for a while, a couple hours at least, maybe a couple days after the contest, I was distraught. I was like, I can't, like, I did all the visualization. I thought I could do it. I practiced. I showed up. I tried. And I still didn't hit my goal. And then I realized that some things just aren't meant to be. And so kind of, you know, alludes to, yeah, the goal will keep moving and we'll keep achieving the things, but sometimes you aren't going to hit your goal and it's just not meant for you. And that's okay as well, because we still want to have these big aspirations. You know, there's that line that's, if you shoot for the moon, you'll land somewhere amongst the stars. You can't hit a goal unless you actually set it. So I totally believe in expanding your, what you believe is possible through huge goals and dreaming big. But also at the same time, there has to be some level of detachment from this is everything, because you might not get it. It might not be for you. And that's okay.
Yeah, I love that. You mentioned something earlier too I wanted to come back on. You talked about your why. And you and I have talked about this when we met for the first time. What is that why exercise meant to you?
The why exercise, starting with why, which is Simon Sinek's book, and uncovering why you actually want to do something, to me, it's a really important practice for longevity in what you want to do, motivating yourself with what you want to do, and then really bringing your best self to the world. I think it's really important before starting a project or a business to look at why in your heart do you actually want to make this happen. And I did not do this with my first business. And that's why I think it's super important. Because I didn't do it with my swimwear company, when things got difficult, I got discouraged in a way that was really hard for me to come back from. I didn't realize the importance of what I was doing and therefore could not motivate enough to kind of overcome the self-doubt that would come up. Also, it didn't have me really connected to my true strengths as a human and what I could really bring to other people. I want to contrast that to starting my speaking business, which is so deeply connected to my why that it makes selling it easy and it makes my motivation for keeping doing it easy. And that kind of goes back to not being attached to the result. You know, with the swimwear company, if I didn't get a result, I would be completely destroyed. With my speaking business, my why is to empower humans to believe in their own inherent self-worth so that the world doesn't miss out on their amazing, unique humanness. And I did exercises to uncover that. And that is something that so touches on my heart. And when I read that and I think about that, I'm like, this is important work. I believe in this so much that if I only affect one person, it still matters. I believe in this so much that even if I don't get my big goals this year, I want to keep showing up and doing it because I know that this work matters and I know that it's important for me to pursue. And that is so much a different energy than I just need to sell some bathing suits because I said I was going to start this company. And so connecting to the why to me is super powerful. If you take the time to really uncover it, it should be something that tugs on your heartstrings, because otherwise, honestly, it won't be strong enough to draw you through the hard times and it won't be strong enough to inspire people in the way that each of us can inspire other people, because every single human walking around has amazing things to offer everyone else.
Yeah, I love that. I see that all the time in talking to entrepreneurs and founders, and those that start with that why, there's just a passion. I love the way you said that. You said it's just so much easier to sell, but you're not selling anything. You're just sharing something that is so, you're so passionate about. This is what I've got to offer the world. This is why I'm doing it. Take it or leave it. I love this. If you don't want it, it goes to the next person that wants it. Like it's just so liberating to be so connected to something that something you believe in so much.
Yeah, it's super liberating. And then I think it's also really important because when you are creating, and we're all creating all the time, I think it's really important to unhook from both criticism and also praise. We don't want to be doing things because we think we're going to get a million likes on Instagram. We want to go back to, oh, I'm doing this because I believe that it's going to be helpful to other people. And that's what's going to bring the best out in the world. That's, I think, another part of like, okay, why do I actually want to do this? Not because I'm trying to avoid criticism and be like, no, I'm good enough. But really also not to pursue that validation and that praise that we want from other people. Even though that feels good, we always need to work on that for ourselves because we're really the only people that can give that to ourselves.
You're right. You mentioned the dopamine hit. There's a great book that I read called Dopamine Nation. And so you talk about social media, it's not a fair fight. Like it takes a lot of discipline to do things for the right reason because, hey, you get a lot of likes and comments and reposts and like, goddamn, that feels good. Like it's a very human thing. It's not easy to, I don't really care what anybody thinks. It's like, yeah, you're engineered to care. You are hardwired to care. Don't be so hard on yourself. It just takes some discipline to also enjoy the process, as you say.
Oh my gosh, Bob, it's hard being a human. I'll tell you. It's really hard. And beautiful and wonderful and heart expanding and joyful and all the things, but it's definitely hard.
Yeah, for sure. So just one last thing I wanted to talk about, because I'm really curious about this. So you mentioned your husband, Brandon, at the end of last year, he had a really bad accident. As you said, you guys are in a fairly dangerous line of work. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened and how all of this work you've done has maybe helped you get through that?
Yeah. So at the end of November, Brandon, my husband, was in a extremely life-threatening paragliding accident, speed flying actually, which is where you have a canopy above you, you're flying. Maybe you've seen this, maybe you haven't, but you have a big canopy above you and you're flying downhill. And he actually fell out of the sky, hit the earth, and tumbled 200, 300 feet down this scree field. And he was life-flighted to Portland in a coma for a few days. We weren't sure if he was going to walk. We weren't sure if he was going to have any brain cognition happening at all. I was in Canada at the time, actually on a work trip, and had to fly back. It was extremely difficult and very heartbreaking and sad. And we're still dealing with that now. But my initial response was, why did this happen? Why is this happening to me? I've had a lot of trauma in my life, actually. My mom died when I was 16. My younger brother was shot 3 times in the neck and head. My dad's been in jail twice. I've had a lot of things where I've had to cultivate grit and resilience. And when you lose a parent at a young age, that really is expanding in the sense that it allows for you to realize how fleeting life is. You know, you don't realize someone is going to die when you're 16 years old, especially your mom. But that certainly made me stronger. So when Brandon's accident happened, I was like, why did this happen? I've already done so much work around resilience and overcoming trauma. I just don't really understand what the universe is trying to dump in my lap and dump in my plate. And I think you can get lost in that. But I really do believe that you're not handed anything that you can't actually handle. And I really do believe that the more trauma you experience, the more joy and compassion you can then experience as well. You know, it's a reverse scale. On one side, it's the hardship that and sorrow that you are faced with allows you to experience that joy and compassion on the other hand. And actually, I wrote down this quote from the prophet last night, and it says, "The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain." And I really believe that. I think a lot of times in life, we are afraid of the other shoe dropping, and you think, I don't want to deal with a hardship. Like, I don't want to have a trauma happen to me that is life-changing. Someone dies, someone gets sick, something happens where you are faced with a hardship. And the thing is that it is going to be hard, and that's okay. We get to experience this full breadth of being humans. And even though at one point, you know, I'm sitting in the hospital room questioning, like, what are we doing here? You know, what's the point of all this? This is so painful. On the other hand, as you move through it and understand that your life experiences set you up in a way that you get to experience this and you can, then you start to understand that expansion and that sorrow that you felt allows for so much joy. And obviously, it's emotional for me. And then I go from laughing to crying. But, you know, I think it's such a beautiful thing at the same time to get to experience that full breath. And even though it is hard and even though you don't want it to happen, it goes back to that trust that you can develop in yourself, that trust that you are worthy no matter what and that you can overcome things. And yet, you know, no matter what happens, it's going to be okay, because it is. You know, even if the worst case scenario happens and you die, it's okay. The universe keeps going on. And for me, that trust in not everything happens for a reason, but that trust in myself, I think is something that we can all cultivate on the positive and not for the hardship side as well.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. That means a lot to me. I was getting pretty emotional there too. It is interesting when you see people go through those things. I've had this happen quite a bit where you see people experience trauma and you say, like, I don't know how you did it. Like, I could never do that. I didn't. It's like, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. Like, what choice do I have? It's happened.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm going to figure my way through it just like everybody else that experiences terrible things does. And you've got a track record of losing your mom early and these things. And like mm-hmm. you said, certainly wouldn't wish that on anybody, but all of the amazing things in your life that have happened the way they have wouldn't have happened if any of those things didn't happen to you. So it is funny how things work out.
Yeah. And that's, I keep going back to, we get to experience this. Did we want to go through that? No. Was it super hard? Yes. Is it still super hard? Yes. Every single day. And yet we get to experience that. I might never know why it happened in that kind of greater sense of the question, but I know that my heart is expanded. And that I think is something only to be grateful for.
Yeah. I love that. So good. So last question. What are you most excited about now?
I am most excited about continuing my speaking. I've taken, you know, a few months off from any sort of work in general with Brandon's accident. Bob, I'm most excited because I'm pregnant. I totally forgot. I'm 4 months pregnant. And, yeah, I'm really excited about that.
I'm really glad you saved that, because if it would have been so hard for your son or daughter to listen to this episode in 10 or 15 or 20 years, knowing that your mom was 4 months pregnant and the most exciting thing that happened to her was going out and speaking to strangers.
Yeah. First time mom. So I'm thrilled for the whole experience.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Congratulations. That's super exciting.
Thank you.
I just can't thank you enough. I had a bunch of things I wanted to cover. We've covered that and more, given me a lot of things to think about and soak on. It's been one of my favorite conversations so far. So thank you so much for offering your time, being so generous with your ideas and your time. And for people that, you know, want to get to know a little bit more about you, we'll put information in the show notes about how they can connect with you online, on social when you're there, reach out and have you speak. It's been awesome, Sensi. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.